Hello, this is Margaret Dixon on Page Turners at WTBR 89.7 FM, Pittsfield. Today we are going to be reading more from The Gods of Pagana. This is the sequel, Time and the Gods, by Lord Dunsany. Hopefully you enjoyed the last one, because we're getting right in now. Preface. These tales are of the things that befell gods and men in Yarnith, Averon, and Zarkandu, and in the other countries of my dreams. Part 1. Time and the Gods. Once when the gods were young, and only their swarthy servant Time was without age, the gods lay sleeping by a broad river upon earth. There in a valley that from all the earth the gods had set apart for their repose, the gods dreamed marble dreams. And with domes and pinnacles, the dreams arose and stood up proudly between the river and the sky, all shimmering white to the morning. In the city's midst, the gleaming marble of a thousand steps climbed to the citadel, where arose four pinnacles beckoning to heaven, and midmost between the pinnacles there stood the dome, vast as the gods had dreamed it. All around, terrace by terrace, there went marble lawns well guarded by onyx lions and carved with effigies of all the gods striding amid the symbols of the worlds. With a sound like tinkling bells, far off in a land of shepherds hidden by some hill, the waters of many fountains turned again home. Then the gods awoke, and there stood Sardathrion. Not to common men have the gods given to walk Sardathrion's streets, and not to common eyes to see her fountains. Only to those to whom in lonely passes in the night the gods have spoken, leaning through the stars, to those that have heard the voices of the gods above the morning, or seen their faces bending above the sea, only to those hath it been given to see Sardathrion, to stand where her pinnacles gathered together in the night fresh from the dreams of gods. For round the valley a great desert lies through which no common traveler may come. But those whom the gods have chosen feel suddenly a great longing at heart. And crossing the mountains that divide the desert from the world, set out across it driven by the gods. Till hidden in the desert's midst, they find the valley at last, and look with eyes upon Sardathrion. In the desert beyond the valley grow a myriad thorns, and all pointing toward Sardathrion. So may many that the gods have loved come to the marble city, but none can return, for other cities are no fitting home for men whose feet have touched Sardathrion's marble streets, where even the gods have not been ashamed to come in the guise of men with their cloaks wrapped around their faces. Therefore, no city shall ever hear the songs that are sung in the marble citadel by those in whose ears have run the voices of the gods. No report shall ever come to other lands of the music of the fall of Sardathrion's fountains, when the waters which went heavenward return again into the lake where the gods cool their brows sometimes in the guise of men. None may ever hear the speech of the poets of that city to whom the gods have spoken. It stands a city aloof. There hath been no rumor of it. I alone have dreamed of it, and I may not be sure that my dreams are true. Above the twilight the gods were seated in the after years, ruling the worlds. No longer now they walked at evening in the marble city, hearing the fountains splash, or listening to the singing of the men they loved, because it was in the after years, and the work of the gods was to be done. But often, as they rested a moment from doing the work of the gods, from hearing the prayers of men, or sending here the pestilence, or there mercy, they would speak a while with one another of the olden year, saying, "Rememberest thou not Sardathrion?" And another would answer, "Ah, Sardathrion, and all Sardathrion's misdraped marble lawns, whereon we walk not now." Then the gods turned to do the work of the gods, answering the prayers of men, or smiting them, and ever they send their swarthy servant Time to heal or overwhelm. And Time went forth into the worlds to obey the commands of the gods, yet he cast furtive glances at his masters, and the gods distrusted Time because he had known the worlds, or ever the gods became. One day, when furtive Time had gone into the worlds to nimbly smite some city whereof the gods were weary, the gods above the twilight, speaking to one another, said, "Surely we are the lords of Time, and gods of the worlds besides. See how our city Sardathrion lifts over other cities. Others arise and perish, but Sardathrion standeth yet, the first and the last of cities. Rivers are lost in the sea, and streams forsake the hills, but ever Sardathrion's fountains arise in our dream city. As was Sardathrion when the gods were young, so are her streets today as a sign that we are the gods." Suddenly, the swart figure of Time stood up before the gods, with both hands dripping with blood and a red sword dangling idly from his fingers, and said, "Sardathrion is gone. I have overthrown it." And the gods said, "Sardathrion? Sardathrion, the marble city? Thou hast overthrown it? Thou, the slave of the gods?" And the oldest of the gods said, Sardathrion, and is Sardathrion gone?" And furtively Time looked at him in the face, and edged towards him, fingering with his dripping fingers the hilt of his nimble sword. Then the gods feared, with a new fear, that he that had overthrown their city would one day slay the gods. And a new cry went wailing through the twilight, the lament of the gods for their dream city, crying, "Tears may not bring again Sardathrion, but this the gods may do who have seen, and seen with unrelenting eyes, the sorrows of 10,000 worlds. Thy gods may weep for thee. Tears may not bring again Sardathrion. Believe it or not, Sardathrion, that ever thy gods sent this doom to thee, he that hath overthrown thee shall overthrow thy gods." How oft, when night came suddenly on morning plain in the fields of twilight, did we watch thy pinnacles emerging from the darkness. Sardathrion, dream city of the gods, and thine onyx lions looming limb by limb from the dusk. How often have we sent our child, the dawn, to play with thy fountain tops. How often hath the evening, loveliest of our goddesses, strayed long upon thy balconies. Let one fragment of thy marble stand up above the dust for thine old gods to caress, as a man, when all else is lost, treasures one lock of the hair of his beloved. Sardathrion, the gods must kiss once more the place where thy streets were once. There were wonderful marbles in thy streets, Sardathrion. Sardathrion, the gods weep for thee. Pretty good stuff so far. We'll see what other stories Gods of Pagana have to offer us, but first, a message from our sponsor.
Support for WTBR comes from Sondrini Enterprises, providing awnings and canopies in Western Massachusetts, retractable awnings, retractable screens, gutter and gutter protection systems, commercial awnings, and screen rooms. Customized solutions available online at Sondrini.com.
UCP of Western Massachusetts is hiring. If you'd like to help people with different abilities lead independent lives, apply at ucpwma.org/jobs. We need direct and living caregivers. Join the agency who's reimagining independence.
The Berkshire's only rock station, 89.7 WTBR-FM, Pittsfield, Massachusetts.
And we're back. For those just tuning in, this is Page Turners with Margaret Dixon reading Time and the Gods by Lord Dunsany. The Coming of the Sea. Once there was no sea, and the gods went walking over the green plains of earth. Upon an evening of the forgotten years, the gods were seated on the hills, and all the little rivers of the world lay coiled at their feet asleep, when Slid, the new god, striding through the stars, came suddenly upon earth, lying in a corner of space. And behind Slid there marched a million waves, all following Slid and tramping up the twilight. And Slid touched earth in one of her great green valleys that divide the south, and here he encamped for the night, with all his waves about him. But to the gods, as they sat upon their hilltops, A new cry came crying over the green spaces that lay below the hills. And the gods said, "This is neither the cry of life nor yet the whisper of death. What is this new cry the gods have never commanded, yet which comes to the ears of the gods?" And the gods together shouting made the cry of the south, calling the south wind to them. And again the gods shouted all together, making the cry of the north, calling the north wind to them. And thus they gathered to them all their winds, and sent these four down into the low plains to find what thing it was called with the new cry, and to drive it away from the gods. Then all the winds harnessed up their clouds and drave forth till they came to the great green valley that divides the south in twain, and there found Slid with all his waves about him. Then for a space Slid and the four winds struggled with one another, till the strength of the winds was gone, and they limped back to the gods, their masters, and said, "We have met this new thing that has come upon the earth, and have striven against its armies, but could not drive them forth. And the new thing is beautiful, but very angry, and is creeping towards the gods." But Slid advanced and led his armies up the valley, and inch by inch and mile by mile he conquered the lands of the gods. Then from their hills the gods sent down a great array of cliffs of hard red rocks and bade them march against Slid. And the cliffs marched down till they came and stood before Slid, and leaned their heads forward and frowned and stood staunch to guard the lands of the gods against the might of the sea, shutting Slid off from the world. Then Slid sent some of his smaller waves to search out what stood against him, and the cliffs shattered them. But Slid went back and gathered together a hoard of his greatest waves and hurled them against the cliffs, and the cliffs shattered them. And again Slid called up out of his deep a mighty array of waves and sent them roaring against the guardians of the gods, and the red rocks frowned and smote them. And once again Slid gathered his greater waves and hurled them against the cliffs. And when the waves were scattered like those before them, the feet of the cliffs were no longer standing firm, and their faces were scarred and battered. Then into every cleft that stood in the rocks, Slid sent his hugest wave, and others followed behind it. And Slid himself seized hold of huge rocks with his claws and tore them down and stamped them under his feet. And when the tumult was over, the sea had won, and over the broken remnants of those red cliffs the armies of Slid marched on and up the long green valley. Then the gods heard Slid exulting far away and singing songs of triumph over their battered cliffs, and ever the tramp of his army sounded nearer and nearer in the listening ears of the gods. Then the gods called to their downlands to save their world from Slid, and the downlands gathered themselves and marched away, a great white line of gleaming cliffs, and halted before Slid. Then Slid advanced no more and lulled his legions, and while his waves were low, he softly crooned a song such as one long ago had troubled the stars and brought down tears out of the twilight. Sternly the white cliffs stood on guard to save the world of the gods, but the song that had once troubled the stars went moaning on, awakening pent desires, till full at the feet of the gods the melody fell. Then the blue rivers that lay curled asleep opened their gleaming eyes, uncurled themselves and shook their rushes, and, making a stir among the hills, crept down to find the sea. And passing across the world, they came at last to where the white cliffs stood, and, coming behind them, split them here and there and went through their broken ranks to Slid at last. And the gods were angry with their traitorous streams. Then Slid ceased from singing the song that lures the world, and gathered up his legions, and the rivers lifted up their heads with the waves, and all went marching on to assail the cliffs of the gods. And wherever the rivers had broken the ranks of the cliffs, Slid's armies went surging in and broke them up into islands and shattered the islands away. And the gods on their hilltops heard once more the voice of Slid exulting over their cliffs. Already more than half the world lay subject to Slid, and still his armies advanced. And the people of Slid, the fishes and the long eels, went in and out of arbors that once were dear to the gods. Then the gods feared for their dominion, and to the innermost sacred recesses of the mountains, to the very heart of the hills, the gods trooped off together, and there found Tintagon, a mountain of black marble, staring far over the earth, and spake thus to him with the voices of the gods. O eldest born of our mountains, when first we devised the earth, we made thee, and thereafter fashioned fields and hollows, valleys and other hills, to lie about thy feet. And now, Tintagon, thine ancient lords, the gods, are facing a new thing which overthrows the old. Go therefore, thou, Tintagon, and stand up against Slid, that the gods be still the gods and the earth still green. And hearing the voices of his sires, the elder gods, Tintagon strode down through the evening, leaving a wake of twilight broad behind him as he strode. And going across the green earth, he came down to Embrady at the valley's edge, and there met the foremost of Slid's fierce armies conquering the world. And against him Slid hurled the force of a whole bay, which lashed itself high over Tintagon's knees and streamed around his flanks, and then fell and was lost. Tintagon still stood firm for the honor and dominion of his lords, the elder gods. Then Slid went to Tintagon and said, Let us now make a truce. Stand thou back from Embrady, and let me pass through thy ranks, that mine armies may now pass up the valley which opens on the world, that the green earth that dreams around the feet of older gods shall know the new god Slid. Then shall mine army strive with thee no more, and thou and I shall be the equal lords of the whole earth, when all the world is singing the chant of Slid, and thy head alone shall be lifted above mine armies when rival hills are dead. And I will deck thee with all the robes of the sea, and all the plunder that I have taken in rare cities shall be piled before thy feet. Tintagon, I have conquered all the stars. My song swells through all the space besides. I come victorious from Mon and Khanagat, on the furthest edge of the worlds. And thou and I are to be equal lords when the old gods are gone, and the green earth knoweth Slid. Behold me gleaming, azure and fair, with a thousand smiles, and swayed by a thousand moods. And Tintagon answered, I am staunch and black, and have one mood, and this, to defend my masters and their green earth. Then Slid went backward, growling, and summoned together the waves of a whole sea, and sent them sitting full in Tintagon's face. Then from Tintagon's marble front the sea fell backwards, crying on to a broken shore, and ripple by ripple straggled back to Slid, saying, Tintagon stands. Far out beyond the battered shore that lay at Tintagon's feet, Slid rested long and sent the Nautilus to drift up and down before Tintagon's eyes, and he and his army sat singing idle songs of dreamy islands far away to the south, and of the still stars whence they had stolen forth, of twilight evenings and of long ago. Still Tintagon stood with his feet planted fair upon the valley's edge, defending the gods and their green earth against the sea. And all the while that Slid sang songs and played with the Nautilus that sailed up and down, he gathered his oceans together. One morning, as Slid sang of old outrageous wars and of most enchanting peace and of dreamy islands and the south wind and the sun, he suddenly launched five oceans out of the deep, all to attack Tintagon. And the five oceans sprang upon Tintagon and passed above his head. One by one the grip of the oceans loosened, one by one they fell back into the deep, and still Tintagon stood, and on that morning the might of all five oceans lay dead at Tintagon's feet. That which Slid had conquered he still held, and there is now no longer a great green valley in the south, but all that Tintagon had guarded against Slid he gave back to the gods. Very calm the sea lies now about Tintagon's feet, where he stands all black amid crumbled cliffs of white, with red rocks piled about his feet. And often the sea retreats far out along the shore, and often wave by wave comes marching in with the sound of the tramping of armies, that all may still remember the great fight that surged about Tintagon once, when he guarded the gods and the green earth against Slid. Sometimes in their dreams, the war-scarred warriors of Slid still lift their heads and cry their battle cry. Then do dark clouds gather about Tintagon's swarthy brow, and he stands out menacing, seen afar by ships where once he conquered Slid. And the gods know well that while Tintagon stands, they and their world are safe, and whether Slid shall one day smite Tintagon is hidden among the secrets of the sea. And for those just tuning in, this is Margaret Dixon on Page Turners reading Time and the Gods by Lord Dunsany. A Legend of the Dawn. When the worlds and all began, the gods were stern and old, and they saw the beginning from under eyebrows hoar with years, all but Inzana, their child, who played with the golden ball. Inzana was the child of all the gods, and the law before the beginning and thereafter was that all should obey the gods, yet hither and thither went all Pagana's gods to obey the dawn child, because she loved to be obeyed. It was dark all over the world, and even in Pagana, where dwell the gods, it was dark when the child Inzana, the dawn, first found her golden ball. Then, running down the stairway of the gods with tripping feet, Chalcedony, Onyx, step by step, she cast her golden ball across the sky. The golden ball went bouncing up the sky, and the dawn child with her flaring hair stood laughing upon the stairway of the gods, and it was day. So gleaming fields below saw the first of all the days that the gods have destined. But towards evening, certain mountains, afar and aloof, conspired together to stand between the world and the golden ball, and to wrap their crags about it, and to shut it from the world, and all the world was darkened with their plot. And the dawn child up in Pagana cried for her golden ball. Then all the gods came down the stairway right to Pagana's gate, to see what ailed the dawn child, and to ask her why she cried. Then Inzana said that her golden ball had been taken away and hidden by mountains black and ugly, far away from Pagana, all in a world of rocks under the rim of the sky, and she wanted her golden ball and could not love the dark. Theriat Umbarodom, whose hound was the thunder, took his hound in leash and strode away across the sky after the golden ball until he came to the mountains afar and aloof. There did the thunder put his nose to the rocks and bay along the valleys, and fast at his heels followed Umbarodom. And nearer the hound, the thunder, came to the golden ball, the louder did he bay, but haughty and silent stood the mountains, whose plot had darkened the world. All in the dark among the crags in a mighty cavern, guarded by two twin peaks, at last they found the golden ball for which the dawn child wept. Then under the world went Umbarodom, with his thunder panting behind him, and came in the dark before the morning from underneath the world, and gave the dawn child back her golden ball. And Inzana laughed and took it in her hands, and Umbarodom went back into Pagana, and at its threshold the thunder went to sleep. Again the dawn child tossed the golden ball far up into the blue across the sky, and the second morning shone upon the world, on lakes and oceans and on drops of dew. But as the ball went bounding on its way, the prowling mists and the rain conspired together and took it and wrapped it in their tattered cloaks and carried it away. And through the rents in their garments gleamed the golden ball, but they held it fast and carried it right away and underneath the world. Then on an onyx step, Inzana sat down and wept, who could no more be happy without her golden ball. And again the gods were sorry, and the south wind came to tell her tales of most enchanted islands, to which she listened not, nor yet to the tales of temples and lone lands that the east wind told her, who had stood beside her when she flung her golden ball. But from far away the west wind came with news of three gray travelers wrapped round with battered cloaks, that carried away between them a golden ball. Then up leapt the north wind, he who guards the pole, and drew his sword of ice out of a scabbard of snow, and sped away along the road that leads across the blue. And in the darkness underneath the world he met the three gray travelers, and rushed upon them, and drove them far before him, smiting them with his sword till the gray cloak streamed with blood. And out of the midst of them, as they fled with flapping cloaks all red and gray and tattered, he leapt up with a golden ball and gave it to the Dawn Child. Again, Inzana tossed the ball into the sky, making the third day, and up it went and fell towards the fields. And as Inzana stopped to pick it up, she suddenly heard the singing of all the birds that were. All the birds in the world were singing all together, and also all the streams. And Inzana sat and listened and thought of no golden ball, nor ever of chalcedony and onyx, nor of all her fathers, the gods, but only of all the birds. Then, in the woods and meadows where they had all suddenly sung, they suddenly ceased. And Inzana, looking up, found that her ball was lost. And all alone in the stillness, one owl laughed. When the gods heard Inzana crying for her ball, they clustered together on the threshold and peered into the dark, but saw no golden ball. And leaning forward, they cried out to the bat as he passed up and down, "Bat that seest all things, where is the golden ball?" And though the bat answered, none heard. And none of the winds had seen it, nor any of the birds, and there were only the eyes of the gods in the darkness peering for the golden ball. Then said the gods, "Thou hast lost thy golden ball," and they made her a moon of silver to roll about the sky. And the child cried and threw it upon the stairway, and chipped and broke its edges, and asked for the golden ball. And Limpang Tung, the lord of music, who was the least of all the gods, because the child cried still for her golden ball, stole out of Pagana and crept across the sky, and found the birds of all the world sitting in trees and ivy and whispering in the dark. He asked them one by one for news of the golden ball. Some had last seen it on a neighboring hill, and others in trees, though none knew where it was. A heron had seen it lying in a pond, but a wild duck in some reeds had seen it last as she came home across the hills, and then it was rolling very far away. At last the rooster cried out that he had seen it lying beneath the world. There Limpang Tung sought it, and the rooster called to him through the darkness as he went, until at last he found the golden ball. Then Limpang Tung went up into Pagana and gave it to the Dawn Child, who played with the moon no more. And the rooster and all his tribe cried out, "We found it! We found the golden ball!" Again Inzana tossed the ball afar, laughing with joy to see it, her hands stretched upwards, her golden hair afloat, and carefully she watched it as it fell. But alas, it fell with a splash into the great sea and gleamed and shimmered as it fell till the waters became dark above it and could be seen no more. And men on the world said, "How the dew has fallen and how the mist set in with breezes from the streams!" But the dew was the tears of the Dawn Child, and the mists were her sighs when she said, "There will no more come a time when I play with my ball again, for now it is lost forever." And the gods tried to comfort Inzana as she played with her silver moon, but she would not hear them, and went in tears to Slid, where he played with gleaming sails, and in his mighty treasury turned over gems and pearls and lorded it over the sea. And she said, "O Slid, whose soul is in the sea, bring back my golden ball." And Slid stood up, swarthy and clad in seaweed, and mightily dived from the last chalcedony step out of Pagana's threshold straight into ocean. There on the sand, among the battered navies of the Nautilus and broken weapons of the swordfish, hidden by dark water, he found the golden ball. And coming up in the night, all green and dripping, he carried it gleaming to the stairway of the gods and brought it back to Inzana from the sea. And out of the hands of Slid she took it and tossed it far and wide over his sails and sea, and far away it shone on lands that knew not Slid, till it came to its zenith and dropped towards the world. But ere it fell, the eclipse dashed out from his hiding and rushed at the golden ball and seized it in his jaws. When Inzana saw the eclipse bearing her plaything away, she cried aloud to the thunder, who burst from Pagana and fell howling upon the throat of the eclipse, who dropped the golden ball and let it fall towards earth. But the black mountains disguised themselves with snow, and as the golden ball fell down towards them, they turned their peaks to ruby crimson, and their lakes to sapphires gleaming amongst silver. And Inzana saw a jeweled casket into which her plaything fell. But when she stopped to pick it up again, she found no jeweled casket with rubies, silver, or sapphires, but only wicked mountains disguised in snow that had trapped her golden ball. And then she cried because there was none to find it, for the thunder was far away chasing the eclipse, and all the gods lamented when they saw her sorrow. And Limpang Tun, who was least of all the gods, was yet the saddest at the Dawn Child's grief. And when the gods said, "Play with your silver moon," he stepped lightly away from the rest, and coming down the stairway of the gods, playing an instrument of music, went out towards the world to find the golden ball, because Inzana wept. And into the world he went till he came to the nether cliffs that stand by the inner mountains in the soul and heart of the earth, where the earthquake dwelleth alone, asleep but astir as he sleeps, breathing and moving his legs and grunting aloud in the dark. Then in the ear of the earthquake, Limpang Tun said a word that only the gods may say, and the earthquake started to his feet and flung the cave away, the cave wherein he slept between the cliffs, and shook himself and went galloping abroad and overturned the mountains that hid the golden ball, and bit the earth beneath them, and hurled their crags about and covered himself with rocks and fallen hills, and went back ravening and growling into the soul of the earth. And there lay down and slept again for 100 years. And the golden ball rolled free, passing under the shattered earth, and so rolled back to Pagana. And Limpang Tun came home to the onyx step and took the Dawn Child by the hand and told not what he had done, but said it was the earthquake, and went away to sit at the feet of the gods. But Inzana went and petted the earthquake on the head, for she said it was dark and lonely in the soul of the earth. Thereafter, returning step by step, Chalcedony, onyx, up the stairway of the gods, she cast again her golden ball from the threshold afar into the blue to gladden the world and the sky, and laugh to see it go. And far away, Trogul upon the utter rim turned a page that was numbered 6 in a cipher that none might read. And as the golden ball went through the sky to gleam on lands and cities, there came the fog towards it, stooping as he walked with his dark brown cloak about him, and behind him slunk the night. And as the golden ball rolled past the fog, suddenly night snarled and sprang upon it and carried it away. Hastily Inzana gathered the gods and said, "The night hath seized my golden ball, and no god alone can find it now. For none can say how far the night may roam, who prowls all round us and out beyond the world." At the entreaty of their Dawn Child, all the gods made themselves stars for torches, and far away through all the sky followed the tracks of night as far as he prowled abroad. And at one time Slid, with the Pleiades in his hand, came nigh to the golden ball, and at another, Yoharneth Lahai, holding Orion for a torch. But lastly, Limpang Tun, bearing the morning star, found the golden ball far away under the world near to the lair of night. And all the gods together seized the ball, and night turning smote out the torches of the gods, and thereafter slunk away. And all the gods in triumph marched up the gleaming stairway of the gods, all praising little Limpang Tun, who through the chase had followed night so close in search of the golden ball. Then far below on the world, a human child cried out to the Dawn Child for the golden ball, and Inzana ceased from her play, that illumined world and sky, and cast the ball from the threshold of the gods to the little human child that played in the fields below and would one day die. And the child played all day long with the golden ball down in the little fields where the humans lived, and went to bed at evening and put it beneath his pillow and went to sleep. And no one worked in all the world because the child was playing. And the light of the golden ball streamed up from under the pillow and out through the half-shut door and shone in the western sky. And Yoharneth Lahai in the nighttime tiptoed into the room and took the ball gently, for he was a god, away from under the pillow, and brought it back to the dawn child to gleam on an onyx step. But some day, night shall seize the golden ball and carry it right away and drag it down into his lair, and Slid shall dive from the threshold into the sea to see if it be there, and coming up when the fishermen draw their nets shall find it not, nor yet discover it among the sails. Limpain Tun shall seek among the birds and shall not find it when the rooster is mute, and up the valley shall go Umborodom to seek among the crags. And the hound, the thunder, shall chase the eclipse, and all the gods go seeking with their stars, but never find the ball. And men, no longer having light of the golden ball, shall pray to the gods no more, who, having no worship, shall no more be the gods. These things be hidden, even from the gods. And that's it for today. I hope you enjoyed hearing the stories of Pagana. I've enjoyed reading them to you. I will see you next time. This is Margaret Dixon on Page Turners. I'll read to you again soon.